start this committee meeting on time every day. If I am not in the room, I would ask that someone else gavel the meeting to order. I will try to start on time and finish on time. With that, originally items on the agenda, we were going to have member introductions first. However, many members are not yet here, and they are filtering into the room. So what I'd like to do is start with House Research, and we're going to have, I believe, Jean Lefevre go first. Please state your name for the record.
Hey, Madam Chair. My name is Jean Lefevre. I'm with the House Research Department. If there's a page somewhere, I have some handouts for the members. I'll just give you a brief introduction to myself and our department. I've been with the department since 1996, and I'm responsible for metropolitan government issues. A lot of you probably already know that. And as you also probably already know, the House Research Department provides research and drafting services on a nonpartisan, confidential basis. We'll draft bills and amendments for members of the House, and we gather information on matters relating to history programs and policies, what other states are doing, the policy implications of proposals you might be considering. And also for the committee, we prepare summaries of all the bills that will be heard in the committee. We also will prepare summaries of other bills, if you'd like, on request. Again, as you probably already know, we work on a confidential basis. That means that we won't reveal the nature of a request you've made to us to anyone else. However, if someone else asks for the same thing, we will give it to them independently. So as a result of that, we would like you to remember, if you are working with constituents or with lobbyists or with other members, let us know, because we'll be happy to work with them too. We just won't talk to them without your approval. So give us that permission, and we'll go with that. One of the things in the handout, the front page of our handout, is just a picture of our website and our business cards. This shows you where you can get some of our publications online. The upper right, there's a section that says government, local, and metropolitan, and that would direct you to all of our publications relating to the work of this committee. If you have any other questions relating to our website or relating to our publications or any work that you'd like done, please feel free to call either Deb or myself, and especially for the new members, just until you get to know what areas we work in, we'll find the person who is in your area, so you don't have to waste your time phoning around. Area. That includes all the commissions and councils in the metropolitan area. The metropolitan area is the counties of Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, Scott, and Washington. And on occasion, we will use an 11-county metro area, which would then include Chisago, Isanti, Sherburn, and Wright counties. Currently, the metro councils and commissions are the Met Council, which we'll be giving you a presentation today, Metropolitan Airports Commission, the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, the Metropolitan Mosquito Control Commission, and then the newly created Minnesota Ballpark Authority. The second piece in your handout just gives a brief summary of the composition, responsibilities, and budget for each of these groups. It also gives you the web address for each one. And I've checked those web addresses, and in all cases, they will provide a lot of additional information if you're looking for it. Then I'd just like to touch briefly on what the responsibilities of this committee would have been or may be with regard to metropolitan government issues. This committee would look at any issues of changes to the structure or the operation or the governance of any of the existing metropolitan area commissions. For example, if you were interested in changing the size of commission or the method of appointment or election of members, the terms of office, the responsibilities of or the jurisdiction of a commission that exists currently, then this committee would also hear any proposals to create any new metropolitan area commissions or councils, as they did last year when we created the Minnesota Ballpark Authority. In addition, you'd also hear proposals to establish entities for regional governance outside the metro area. If, for instance, it was thought that there was a need for regional governance in the greater Duluth area or the greater St. Cloud area, that would be within the responsibility of this committee. And finally, then you'd hear questions of consolidation or elimination of any of the existing metropolitan councils or commissions. Issues relating to metro government frequently go either before this committee or after this committee to other committees. Commonly, those would be transportation, housing, environment, or taxes. And because this is a policy committee, not a finance committee, usually a money committee would see any bill that had both policy and fiscal implications for metropolitan affairs. So that's kind of just a very brief overview, and Deb will talk about local government issues if there aren't any burning questions on the metropolitan front.
Okay. I just first want to state that the local government committee does now have a quorum. Ms. Dyson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members of the committee, I'm Deb Dyson, the House Research Department analyst with responsibility for local government issues. Just briefly, I've been with the House Research Department since 1991 and with this committee since 1992. Local government issues include the powers, duties, structure, and governance of cities, counties, towns, and special districts. And these issues may be addressed in legislation making changes to the general law governing these entities or as special legislation for individual local governments. I do not handle things related to local government finance issues such as TIF, tax increment financing, local government aids, property taxes, local option sales tax. All of those financial things, they may come through this committee. That's another decision of others. But when those matters are looked at by this committee, the House research analyst responsible for those areas and with expertise in those areas will be here to assist with questions that may come up as needed. Same thing with any other subject matter that may come in front of the committee. The analyst that has that expertise will make an attempt to be here to help out as needed. In the handouts, the third handout that Jean referred to, it's titled Local Government. It's a two-sided page, and it's a very cursory overview of local government in the state and provides a few commonly asked for statistics, like how many and what's the population. And these are pages that are out of a publication that's going to be coming out of House Research very shortly, I hope, called the Data Book for Legislators, and we publish it every biennium. And we have other publications, as Jean mentioned. One is on special legislation and explains the difference between general law and special law and the constitutional limits on special legislation. There are others relating to things like city classification, the 60-day rule, topics in eminent domain, compensation for local government employees, similar things such as that. One of the reasons that this committee exists and works on legislation that it does is because local governments, political subdivisions, get their authority from the state. Local governments have no inherent powers, but only have such powers as are expressly conferred by statute or as implied as necessary in aid of those powers that are expressly conferred. This is known as Dillon's Rule. The severity of the Dillon's Rule is mitigated by two things. One is that long ago the legislature modified the rule to allow cities to adopt home rule charters and also mitigated it by the Dillon's Rule impact by providing a broad grant of authority to cities and townships to adopt ordinances for the general welfare. A home rule charter, as many of you are probably well aware, is like a local constitution and not only provides for the particular governmental organization of the municipality, but also provides for substantive authority to be exercised by the governing body for the community. A charter has to be consistent with the state constitution and state law, and also state law can override a local charter. At this time, only cities adopt home rule charters under the general law, but there was a special law in the 1980s that authorized Ramsey County to adopt a county home rule charter, and that was approved by the voters in 1990, and it's the only county in the state that has a home rule charter. The statutory authority to legislate for general welfare also, as I mentioned, is one of the things that mitigates the severity of Dillon's Rule. And it's a pretty broad grant of authority for a local government to exercise any power that's not enumerated specifically in law, and it would be things that contribute to the protection of the health, morals, peace, good order of the community, promoting welfare of the community. Although counties do not have an express general welfare authority, there is a statute that's sometimes viewed as providing a similar grant of authority because it authorizes counties to protect the public health. Examples of topics handled by the committee in the past, it's sort of all over the board. Times when I've described local government law to others, I've sort of pointed to the statutes and I said you can find local government law in every volume of Minnesota statutes. But common themes that come up, land use. Last year, eminent domain was a very big issue. Municipal boundary adjustments, local bonding authority, municipal tort liability, local government administration and financial accountability, uniform municipal contracting law, changes in local government election laws, fence law, that's an interesting one, options in county government structure, cartways, local government publication requirements, the public safety radio system, and then a lot of other materials, including gravel. With that, I'll just say I'm looking forward to working with all of you through the biennium. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions for the staff? All right. With that, I'm going to go around the table and ask members to introduce themselves, where they represent, and if they've ever served on the local government committee previously. So why don't we start right there?
Good afternoon. My name is Augustine Willie Dominguez. I go by Willie mostly. I represent District 58B. This is my first term as an elected official, so I'm anxious to get to work and work at the local government. Thank you.
My name's Mark Biskins. I live in Jordan, representing District 35B, and I have served on local government and metropolitan affairs about 4 years ago, so I took a little hiatus, and it's wonderful to be back. Thank you, Manager.
I'm Maury Lanning. I represent District 9A, Moorhead in northern Clay County, and this will be my third term on this committee and third term in the House.
Representative Lanning is also the lead Republican on this committee.
Go ahead. Madam Chair and members, I'm Representative Mike Beard. I represent Shakopee and Prior Lake, also known as District 35A. I've never served in this committee, this will be my third term, but I've been before it a couple times and been treated rather fairly most of the time by this committee. I'm glad to actually sit on this side of the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Markwart, my second term on the Local Government Committee, and I represent District 9B in west central Minnesota, which includes the entire counties of Traverse and Wilkin and the portions of Clay County and Becker County.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Representative Bev Scalzi, and I represent District 54B, which is Little Canada, Shoreview, Badness Heights, Gem Lake, part of Roseville. And this is my second term, and it's also my second term on this committee after having served six terms on the Little Canada City Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Mark Olson. This is my eighth term, my second term on this committee, and I represent District 16B, which is all entirely within the boundaries of Sherburne County, Big Lake, Becker, Elk River, Zimmerman areas. It's good to be here, and privileged to pass the gavel on.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm Ken Schumper. I represent District 31B, which is most of Houston and most of Fillmore County, where we love local government. Having been on the town board, I can tell you we love local government, and I'm very happy to be on the committee here with you.
All right, thank you. Ken is also the vice chair of this committee. Representative Hausman, if you'd like to...
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
We're already scheduled for tonight. Alice Hausman, what do you want to know?
Just introduce yourself, where you represent, and the government.
I represent some communities in St. Paul, the Midway area, Como Park, St. Anthony Park, and the city of Falcon Heights. I said this morning, if you come to the state fair, you're in the middle of my district.
And have you ever served on the local government committee before?
I have not, but I was told that you needed some balance, and so I'm balanced, I guess. They also told me it was where Met Council, they reminded me it's where Met Council comes, and so, of course, I spend a lot of time with them.
That's great. Two gentlemen here. All right. Before we move on to the Met Council presentation, I just wanted to let you know there's a set of proposed rules in your packet. I'd like you to take a look at them. I do anticipate we'll adopt some rules at the next meeting, but I am open for your suggestions. There will be no assigned seats. We will start promptly on time. I stated before, if I am not able to be in the room at that time, either the vice chair or the lead Republican may start the meeting. I will do my best to start the meeting on time and finish on time whenever possible. There will not be a 24-hour rule for amendments, but we do ask that you be respectful of the staff. If you have a substantial amendment, you do need to get it to the staff in time so that they can do their proper work. In the event that there does become a problem, we'll look at implementing a 24-hour rule later on. But it is my anticipation that we would have a very fair and deliberative bipartisan committee. There will be times that we will disagree, but I hope that we will do that in a very respectful way for both sides. With that, I'm going to turn this over to the Metropolitan Council. I've asked them to give a presentation and stand for questions. I started with the Met Council as the first item because it is one of the significant things that we do. And I do have a bill that will be coming next Monday to eliminate the Oversight Committee of the Metropolitan Council in hopes that we could do the oversight right here in this committee. So that's the reason they're here, and that's the reason we're here the first day. So with that, Mr. Bell, please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Peter Bell. I am Chair of the Metropolitan Council, and with me to my left is Judd Shetman, who handles government affairs at the Metropolitan Council. As you can see, we're having a little bit of difficulty with our audiovisual, I believe. However, all of you have a copy of what was going to be our slides, and so perhaps you can follow along with that. I have a presentation that, Madam Chair, I understand that I will go through, and then after that presentation, stand for questions as appropriate. I have also a number of staff with me at the Metropolitan Council, so hopefully we will be able to get into any level of depth of questions or concerns that you may have. As you see, as you look at the materials, we have started with the council mission, and I will read that very briefly or quickly. The mission of the Metropolitan Council is to develop in cooperation with local communities a comprehensive regional planning framework focusing on transportation, wastewater, parks, and aviation systems that guides the efficient growth of the metropolitan area. The council operates transit and wastewater services and administers housing and other grant programs. A little bit further about who we are, as all of you may be aware, the council is comprised of 17 members appointed by the governor, and we all serve at the pleasure of the governor. 16 members represent geographic districts across the 7-county metropolitan area, and I, as chair, serve at large. All seats, including mine, are up for appointment in 07, and these appointments also, I believe, as you're aware, need to be confirmed by the Senate. The third page is our budget, and this is a 30,000-foot view of our budget because it has many moving parts. As you can see, we are a relatively large organization. Our annual budget is $665 million, and you can see what the sources of those funds are. The state provides about 33% of our budget, or $215 million. Property taxes, or property tax levy, is about $67 million. Other sources of funds, or 3%, is $19 million. Passenger fares from the transit system that we operate is 12% of our budget, or $83 million. It's important to understand that in terms of our fare box recovery rate for our transit operations, we're hovering right around 31% for that, but of our total budget, it's 12%. Small use of reserves, we get federal grants of $81 million, and then we also charge wastewater services, both a connection fee to connect up to our wastewater treatment systems, and then what's called a flow charge, or to actually process the wastewater, is encompassed in that $190 million, which is 29%. This includes debt service and pass-through grants. If you just look at the operation portion of our budget, it is $453 million. Salaries and benefits is about 60% of the operating budget. It's important to note that this represents an increase of 2.9% over our calendar year 06 budget, so that is modest growth. Property tax levies decrease, this is something that we feel very proud of, 0.4% from 2005 payable to 2006 levies. $51 million is passed through from the federal government for our Housing and Redevelopment Authority. I believe we're the largest HRA in the region. I will speak more about that in a minute. We have $51 million for our Section 8 program, $8 million for parks, operations, and maintenance, $17 million for our livable communities grants, and then about $120 million or $125 million for debt service. We have we do a great deal of bonding primarily for two things. One, to operate or for transit capital. The second thing we bond for is for the construction of our wastewater treatment system.
We don't have this up yet. The lamp is burning
up. Oh, it's the lamp. All right. The next area, the next slide you have is our staff complement. And you can see between 01 and 05, we have had an overall decrease of 156 positions at the Metropolitan Council. 81 of those were in transit, 30 in regional administration, and 45 of those were in our wastewater service area for the 156 decrease. And again, that is between 2001 and 2005. Our footprint, quite simply stated, is the seven-county metropolitan area. This was established when the council was established in 1967. Many argue that the metropolitan region is larger than that. That's subject to no small amount of debate. But our statutory authority is confined to the seven counties listed in the materials provided. We have statutory responsibilities for planning, the next slide, and that's in, we look at our planning activities in three major areas: long-range comprehensive planning, I'll speak more about that in a minute, regional transportation planning, we developed the regional transportation plan, not just for transit, but for transit and for roads in the seven county area, and we do a great deal, we do all of the parks planning as well. In the seven county area, there's 53,000 acres of parkland in the seven county area, 177 miles of trails. There are 10 what's called implementing agencies, and these implementing agencies operate the parks. We do not operate the parks. We take primary responsibility for planning for the parks and trails, and as you'll see in a minute, we do some funding of capital and operating expenses as well. The statutory responsibilities we have for operations are in three areas. Our regional wastewater system, which I will go into some detail. This is a major part of the Met Council. It is probably one of the least understood and in some respects appreciated aspect of the Met Council. It's one of those things that people don't want to give a lot of attention to. As long as the wastewater system is working efficiently and effectively, no one cares. And when it doesn't work, everyone cares. Bill Moore, the head of our wastewater system, the first piece of advice he gave me is, Peter, if I call you up at 2 in the morning, don't answer the phone. There's going to be a major problem. But it is probably the area of the Met Council that people are least familiar with. It is a huge part of the council, and one that we're quite proud of. Our transit system is probably one of the most visible aspects of the council. running the metro, not just the Hiawatha Light Rail line, but the bus system for the region, and coordinating our efforts with the opt-outs. And then, as I mentioned, we run an HRA, primarily Section 8 certificates, almost 6,000 Section 8 vouchers in 99 cities. Essentially, our HRA provides those services for the small communities in the seven-county metropolitan area. It was thought that they could not efficiently provide HRA services themselves, and so it was determined a number of years back that that responsibility would rest with the Metropolitan Council, and we provide that service to many small municipalities. Of course, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center have their own HRA. We provide it for the small municipalities. Moving to regional development, let's see. One of the areas that is a comparatively small area of the Metropolitan Council but gets a great deal of attention is our regional planning. And we've developed a flow chart for you. That's on my page 10. I think it's, the pages in the slide, I think.
Yes.
Do you have this? Is this your page 10?
Yes, it is.
Good. Then that's how I'll refer to it from now on. On page 10, I really have, we've outlined for you the basics of our planning responsibility and authority. And again, this is not without some question and historically some controversy. We are statutorily obligated to develop what's called a development guide. Ours is called the 2030 Framework. And this guide sets out broad principles regarding growth and development in the seven-county area until 2030. And again, we are statutorily required to do that. Out of that development guide come what we term systems plans and system statements. Now, those systems plans and system statements are for the four areas that we have statutory responsibility for: parks, aviation, wastewater, and transportation. So we set up this broad development guide, which is the 30,000-foot view of development in this region until 2030. And it is really, when I give speeches to the public, I say a major goal of this area of the council is to plan for the growth of this region of 1 million people, answering very basic questions. Where are they going to live? Do we have enough parks and recreation area for them? Is our transit and road system adequate for their needs? Do we have enough wastewater capacity for them? Answering those very broad questions with the 189 municipalities in the seven-county area, with the seven counties, to answer those very large questions. The second area is the systems plans and statements in those four areas. So that goes from the 30,000 foot to about the 5,000. Where specifically are we going to build our wastewater treatment plants? Where specifically are we going to run our interceptor pipes? Where specifically are we going to put parks? Where specifically are we going to put trails and roads and the like? Based upon the systems plans and the system statements, and it's very important to make this point, we do not do this in isolation. We develop those systems plans and statements in very close consultation with 189 municipalities in the seven-county region and the seven counties. So we don't go off in a room by ourselves and develop those. We work very closely with those municipalities. Every 10 years, those municipalities then need to develop a comprehensive plan that is based upon our systems plan. So we develop the systems plan, give those to the cities. The cities then develop a comprehensive plan, and then based upon that, they do local zoning. That's, broadly speaking, the flow of our planning responsibility. The development guide, then the systems plans and statements, comprehensive plans are developed from that, and local zoning results from those comprehensive plans. And it is an interactive and cooperative process. Our development guide, that first rung, has three major goals: to work cooperatively with regional partners to accommodate growth. The second is to enhance transportation choices and increase safety and efficiency. And the third is to preserve vital natural areas and resources for future generations. This is the heart of the Met Council's regulatory authority. When you think of the Met Council at all as a regulatory body, this is what I'm talking about now, is the heart and soul of that regulatory authority and power. But again, it is used, or I would like to think, in a cooperative sense with the municipalities and the county. On page 12, I speak about systems, plans, and statements. We have, as I mentioned, statutory responsibility for four systems: aviation, parks, wastewater, and transportation. We have consolidated those four systems into three plans. We put aviation and transportation together, and then we do a system plan and system statements for that, and then we have a second one for a transportation and for parks and wastewater. And again, this is done with the local communities. On page 13, the local comprehensive plan updates. Communities must update local comprehensive plans by the end of 2008. The last period was 1998 that the comprehensive plans were done, and they must be done in concert with those, or in sync with those systems plans and systems statements. Page 14, we have hopefully improved the process for comprehensive plans. We have a local planning handbook that is sent out to the municipalities and the counties, and we offered 16 technical training workshops in 06 to assist municipalities in doing their 2008 comprehensive plans. We had approximately 500 attendees, including 200 trainers, attend a series of these workshops that we provided. So they were very well attended. The municipalities and staff of the cities in the seven-county region were very interested in this. On page 15, you have our community development functions. It is to administer the Land Planning Act, provide planning data to local communities, identify and analyze regional issues, guide regional parks and open space, and deliver housing assistance. That's in the Community Development Department of the Metropolitan Council. And as I mentioned, I mentioned the planning functions of that. In addition, the community development functions are running our HRA that I talked about a minute ago. Page 16 is our livable communities account. When you think of the Met Council, I mentioned a minute ago that the comprehensive plans, that whole process is at the core of our regulatory authority. We also have a number of grant programs. These are the carrots that the council has. I'm sure many of you are aware of the grant programs we have. We essentially have three basic grant programs. One is the Livable Communities Grant Program. This is right now about $8 million per year. This program was initially set up to assist communities in funding projects that, for lack of a better term, adhere to Met Council principles. They were often mixed-use developments along transit lines and the like. We have provided funding for $74 million of this funding that we believe has leveraged $3 billion of investment since the program started in 1996. It is very well received by the municipalities. There was the council has, through the past 4 years that I've been there, has added new criteria, and we propose to continue to revise and modify this program. The second program is our local incentives account, and that's really an affordable housing program that we do with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and the Twin City Family Housing Fund. We put about $1.5 million into that each year. And the third is what we call our tax-based revitalization program, which essentially is a fund to clean up brownfields. We've put $61 million in that since 1996, and annually we put in about $5 million. So the grant programs we have are in three areas: livable communities, affordable housing, and cleaning up brownfields. Proposed initiatives. One of the things that we are interested in doing is getting more flexibility with the use of these accounts. Frankly, we want to really look at the livable communities program. This is the one that $8 million a year that funds programs that adhere to council principles. Switch some of those dollars, or be allowed to switch some of those dollars to our tax-based revitalization program, or the program that is used to clean up brownfields, and allow a small amount of that to be given to small communities as grant dollars for doing their comprehensive plans. We're going to have a proposal to that effect that we're going to be bringing to the legislature. I believe it'll pass through this committee. It'll start in this committee. And we will have more details about that. We will also be reducing, and this is an important feature, our levy, because we levy for these grant dollars, or we levy for the livable communities portion of this. We will be reducing that program, or we will be proposing to reduce that program by $1 million and reducing our tax levy by that amount. On page 18, you have the Community Development Operating Budget of 8.2, and you can see where those dollars come from. Federal is $4.4 million, or 53%. Property tax is $2.5 million, or 31%, and others $1.3 million. The vast majority goes to fund our HRA, and the rest goes for our planning grants. But we wanted to pull that portion out of our overall budget. Our regional park system starts on page 19. Let me give you a brief overview of our park system. I've told you a bit of information about that. In 1974, the Metropolitan Parks Act was adopted. It authorized the council to prepare a regional recreational open space policy plan, which identified land that cities, counties, and special park districts would acquire and develop for outdoor recreational purposes. This land, together with state facilities, should reasonably meet the outdoor recreational needs of residents and visitors to the metropolitan area. The parks system, as I mentioned, is a little over 52,000 acres. It's close to 53,000 acres. In 1974, when it was passed, this act was passed, it was 31,000 acres. Incidentally, we do a survey at the council of the residents of the seven-county area, and they constantly rate our park system as the amenity that they enjoy the most. Of all the things that government does, I think probably the citizens think that we run our park system as well as anything else. They love our park system. Matter of fact, one of the concerns I have is there is a risk of loving our system to death. The use that we get of our park system continues to grow. We have 49 regional parks and park reserves, 6 special recreational features, about 177 miles currently of regional trails, and we have 33 million visitors to our park system annually. You can see on page 22 where our parks are located. And I would simply remind you, in our park system plan, we are proposing to grow our park district from the 52,000 plus acres to about 70,000 acres, from 177 miles of trails to 877 miles of trails. And if you do the math, that simply keeps up with population growth. That's all it does, is it keeps up with the growth. We're about 2.8 million. We're going to grow by about a third by 2030, and the growth of our park system that we are proposing simply keeps pace with that growth. It really does no more than that. On page 23, you see the 10 implementing agencies. They actually operate the park system. The Met Council does the planning. We fund a lot of the capital budget for the parks. We fund a small piece of the operating budget for the parks. And I'll get into that, those details in a minute. But the actual operations, the day-to-day operations of the parks, we do not do. The implementing agencies do. Now we compare that to the transit system. We actually plan the transit system, and we run the transit system. We actually plan the wastewater system, and we run the wastewater system. We plan the park system, but we do not run the park system. So that's an important distinction to keep in mind. On page 24, I outline further what our role is. It is to create a policy plan, designate parkland as regional, review and approve the master plan, and prepare and partially finance the capital improvements program. We have a, what's called a Parks and Open Space Commission. A gentleman by the name of Glenn Scovall heads that, and he along, or this commission along with the implementing agencies, develop our regional parks plan. We finance about 40% of the capital improvement program for the parks. The remainder of this comes from multiple other sources, many times from the parks themselves. Last year, I believe it was a combination of really three funding sources: Met Council bonds, state bonds, and lottery and lieu funds that funds for the capital for the parks. We fund about 10% of the parks' operating budget. So we fund 40% of the capital budget for the parks and 10% of the operating budget for the parks. In statute, I believe it states that we are to funding, what is it, about 40%? 40% of the operating budget for the parks, and we have not been able to reach that. We've never been higher than 12%. We're right around 10% now. The 20-year average has been 8.8% for parks operation. On page 25, I talk about further our role. Again, as I mentioned, we issue bonds. When I started off with our overview of our budget, you saw a great deal of dollars go to debt service. And the debt service that we have, I said, principally is for our wastewater system, which is a hugely capital-intensive activity, for our capital for buses and park and rides. And then the third thing that we bond for a great deal is for our parkland. That's the third major area that we bond for.
Just a clarifying question.
Representative Houseman.
Unless I'm missing it, I see a sources and uses circle graph for all the other areas, but I don't see one for parks. Is that right? You don't have a...
Mr. Bell?
We didn't do that, Madam Chair, Representative Houseman, we did not. Most of it is passed through dollars. Our function with the parks is primarily planning, and then it's the other financial relationships we have with the parks is providing them pass-through dollars for the operations and the bonding that we do. And because of that, it was relatively small and almost all passed through. We have a very small staff at the Met Council that deals with park-related issues, and we have no operational responsibilities at all. We can provide that for you if you would like it.
Just curious about the property tax.
Yeah, we can provide that. We can provide that for you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Go ahead.
On 26, I will move to environmental services, and it really starts on 27. Our wastewater, our environmental services is a fancy name for wastewater services. As I mentioned, we provide a wastewater system plan, and that's that wastewater system plan feeds into the comp plan now. So when we do the system plan, municipalities have to tell us how they're going to grow and develop to efficiently use our wastewater facilities. We actually provide wastewater services. We have done a water supply study as well. The legislature gave us authority last year to do a water supply study. We did the first phase of that water supply study, and that report will be coming to the legislature, and a surface water management plan review. Those are the four basic functions of our environmental services. On page 28, you can see where our wastewater services go. We have 8 treatment plants. We have 600 miles of regional interceptors. That's a fancy name for those huge pipes that the wastewater travels in. We estimate that it's $3 billion in replacement value. We provide wastewater services to 104 of the 189 communities in the 7-county metropolitan area. And we process approximately 300 million gallons per day of wastewater. I am told that would fill the Metrodome 4 or 5 times over. This is truly a world-class system that we provide. As I'll indicate later, we continue to get awards from the EPA on the efficient processing of wastewater that we have. As stated on page 29, we have near-perfect compliance with wastewater effluent permits. We have been recognized for outstanding performance by the U.S. EPA, Minnesota's PCA, and the National Association of Clean Water Agencies. Every time we get an award, I am part of the ceremony, and it's been my pleasure to have done that numerous times since I have been chair of the Metropolitan Council. Continuing on page 30, we have the 2006 National Environmental Achievement Award and the 2006 Project of the Year Award from the Minnesota Public Works Association. Again, this is something we are not only one of the most efficient processors of wastewater in the nation, as you'll see in a minute by what our charges are, but we do it at a world-class standard. I am constantly told that the water we discharge into the Mississippi is cleaner than the water in it, and the fish spawn around our discharge pipes. That was something that I haven't verified and actually seen it, but I am told that. We've got a number of major initiatives, one on phosphorus. Between 2003 and 2005, we have had a 49% decrease in the amount of phosphorus discharged by our regional wastewater treatment plants at the Metro plant, which is our largest one. We reduced the phosphorus discharge to less than 1 milligram per liter. A second initiative regarding mercury, working in partnership with the Minnesota Dental Association, we have had nearly 100% of metro area dental offices participate in a voluntary program to keep mercury-containing dental amalgam out of the wastewater system. This has significantly reduced mercury levels in the wastewater that comes into our treatment plants. Air emissions is a third initiative. New state-of-the-art incinerator equipment at the Metro plant has reduced air emissions by many pollutants, including particulates and mercury, by more than 95% to 2004 levels. That's something that we also think is important. We have an infiltration and inflow initiative. We're starting a surcharge program. We spent a lot of time on this one this year to earmark local dollars to reduce excessive infiltration and inflow of clear water into our wastewater system. Essentially what we had is a lot of non-wastewater was coming into our wastewater system, and you're processing water that doesn't need to be processed. Well, sooner or later, you got to have more of those pipes, or you got to have more treatment plants to process the water that doesn't need to be there. And so we worked with 104 communities, essentially creating some incentives, some financial penalties and incentives for them to clean up their inflow infiltration so that we're not processing water or treating water that otherwise would not need to be treated. And then energy reduction. The Metro plant incinerators use 80% less natural gas than the previous equipment, cutting costs by $3.4 million annually. They also recover heat that is used to generate electricity, saving up to $600,000 a year in avoided electrical costs. We're looking to further reduce our energy costs by 15% by 2010 and to increase our use of renewable energy. I would also add that we are working fairly aggressively with the University of Minnesota on a number of other initiatives that aren't at a level where they can, where we have committed to undertaking them, but we are working fairly aggressively with the University of Minnesota on a number of other energy-saving initiatives, both for our wastewater treatment facility as well as our transit system. You can see on page 32 what our budget is of $192 million. Sources of that come from our wastewater charges of $146 million. Our SAC charges, which are our hookup charges, that's the cost if you build a home and you want to hook up into our wastewater treatment system, that's the cost of that. That's 18%. And then industry often wants us to process their various wastes, and that's about 5%. Bottom line, when you look at our sources of funding, it is a self-funding system. It doesn't really rely on taxpayer dollars at all. Our wastewater system pays for itself. And you can see debt service, labor, and non-labor costs are the three uses of those funds. Our municipal wastewater charges on page 33, you can see what those charges are. I won't go through all of the graph, it speaks for itself. Our charges have been relatively consistent. These are the charges to process wastewater. We charge a municipality for processing wastewater, and the municipality charges the homeowner. So we don't directly charge the homeowner. We charge the city of St. Paul or Falcon Heights or Minneapolis or Shakopee and the like, and then a charge goes to the homeowner. And you can see what our charges have. This is fairly consistent and fairly standard. You'll also note the reduction in employees we've had in our wastewater system.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we leave the wastewater issue, Mr. Bell, I'm wondering if you could give us more of a sense as to the status of sewer separation here in the metropolitan area, where storm and sanitary sewers in many parts of older parts of communities were not separated. I know that there's been some work in that area. I'd like to hear you talk about the extent to which that is happening, and also, as you mentioned, with infiltration, some pumps being directed into sanitary sewer systems. What kind of progress are you making in getting those things changed here in the metro area?
Mr. Bell.
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, our inflow infiltration program is to do exactly that, because we get a fair amount of storm water into our system and some pumps come into our system and the like. We are creating an incentive program. In essence, we are telling municipalities that, because we are able to gauge how much inflow and infiltration we have, that they need to take steps to clean that up. If they do not take steps to clean that up, they will have an additional charge that they will have to bear for our costs of treating that water. We are giving them a time period to do that, and we're trying to be as flexible with that as we can. We have worked with the 104 municipalities in the 7-county region where we treat wastewater for about setting up this program. They understand that it is much cheaper to clean it up, the inflow infiltration at the source, than it is to build more treatment plants to do that. And I would say that we have a good cooperative working relationship. Mr. Moore, I don't know if you want to add to that in terms of where we're at. Bill Moore runs our environmental services.
Please come to the table and state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Bill Moore, General Manager of Environmental Services. I think the question was how much separation has occurred between in the four cities and
how much is left.
St. Paul and South St. Paul have essentially completed their separation programs. There hasn't been an overflow from either of those cities in 5 or 6 years. Minneapolis has made great steps. There still are some occasional overflows, I'd say, in the neighborhood of 2 to 3 or 4 a year. The volumes in the last several years have been less than 10 million gallons discharged into the river totally. If you could compare that to what would have happened 15 years ago, it would be several billion gallons a year going into the river. So Minneapolis has made great steps, but there still is some separation work that's needed with the city, and the city does have a capital improvement program that is trying to address that in conjunction with the INI program that Chair Bell talked about.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Lanning,
with other kinds of infiltration problems like sump pumps, there was a building practice here back in the 40s and 50s where sump pumps typically were connected right to the sanitary sewer system. Have communities been actively fixing that problem, and is there a lot of work yet to do on it? Or?
Mr. Moore.
Madam Chair and committee members, some cities have done a pretty good job of addressing this, but not all of them have. And that's really what was the genesis behind our infiltration inflow program, was to provide more incentives for cities to do that. So there certainly has been a lot of good work that's been done, but there is a lot of work that has to be done in the future, and we've estimated that it's in the neighborhood of $100 million of additional work to get rid of that additional infiltration inflow, of which a large amount of it is sump pumps, not all of it, but a good chunk of it is. So cities are adopting ordinances and doing inspection programs, and we're very encouraged with the efforts that cities have been undertaking with this.
Thank you.
Mr. Bell, I'm going to ask, we're starting to run short on time in the committee, I'm going to ask if you could go through the transportation piece a little more rapidly so we have time for questions from members.
Very good, Madam Chair. Quickly on page 34, you see the rate comparisons, and you can see by a quick scan of that that we're relatively low. Our capital budget is for wastewater is $1.5 billion. That's our 10-year capital budget, and you can see the information on that. But again, that's a self-financing system. On page, getting to the transportation issue, on page 37, you can see we our planning functions with transportation are to perform the federal state mandated planning, including the regional transportation policy plan. We are the MPO. Of the region. We coordinate planning activities with MnDOT, transit operators, the MAC, and local governments. But we are very, very involved in the region's transportation planning efforts. We are central, and we are the official MPO for this area. Our transit functions start on page 38. We provide for and contract and coordinate metropolitan transit services. So the bulk of it we provide through Metro Transit. We contract for a great deal. Metro Mobility is all contracted out. And we coordinate services with the suburban service providers, formerly known as the opt-out. So those are the three areas. We provide it, we contract for it, and we operate it. I won't go into the transportation policy plan, but we do have a transportation policy plan that focuses on highways, transit, airports, freight, and pedestrian bicycle activities. Our priorities on page 40 are to balance demand and capacity through land use, transportation connections, and preserve and manage the existing system. That's a very, very important thing. We sometimes get caught up in the glitzy new things like the Hiawatha light rail line and forget that the bus service will be for the foreseeable future the backbone of our transit service. Our priorities are to maintain the existing system, to expand and improve the bus system, to develop our transit ways, to increase ridership. This is an important goal, 50% by 2020 and 100% by 2030, and to facilitate higher density, housing density along transit corridors. You can see on page 42 our Tier 1 and Tier 2 transit ways. Tier 1 is Central, North Star, Cedar Avenue, 35W, and Botno Boulevard. Cedar, 35W, and Botno are busways. Central and North Star, of course, North Star is heavy rail. Central is light rail. Tier 2 are the Southwest Rush Line and Red Rock lines as well. And, of course, we have Hiawatha and the 35W hot lane. But this is what our Tier 1, Tier 2 transit plan looks like. A little bit on page 44 is our regional transit system. You can see the subcomponents of it. Metro Transit is the workhorse. I think, Brian, what, 85% of all transit services carried by Metro Transit?
93%.
All right. Suburban transit authorities are formerly known as the opt-outs. We have contracted regular route service. We coordinate the Metro Mobility. There are what is known as community-based services, van pools, and regular car pools. The Suburban Transit Authority, again known as the opt-outs, this is 12 cities providing their own transit services. Our contracted regular routes, this is about 5% of the regular route services provided through contracts. Metro Mobility, again, we operate or we contract for and dial a ride service as well. 45, I'll be brief. Daily congestion is getting worse. I continue to say, Judd teases me in every speech I give, I talk about congestion is this region's number one livability issues. That is exemplified by the fact that daily vehicle miles traveled have increased 127% from 1983 to 2003. Freeway drivers spend, on average, 43 hours in congestion at a cost of $175 million per year. And our transportation is, or congestion problem is growing second only to that of Atlanta. Our transit system, however, I would argue is in good shape. Our regional bus ridership is 72 million rides. That is up 4.5% from 2005. I would remind all of you that we had a very difficult and painful strike. We had a number of fare increases. We have done a number of route cuts. And in spite of the challenges to our transit system, ridership is up. Suburban ridership is up 11% over last year. The Hiawatha light rail line ridership is at 9.4 million in August. We had our first million rider month, and it is up 19% from 2005. Page 47, park and rides. I'll be very quick about this. We just can't build them fast enough. When we build them, they're full. They're used to a very large extent. On 48 is our budget. You can see it's a little over $300 million, the sources. I can go in more depth, Madam Chair, when I entertain questions, but you can see MVEF, the State General Fund, federal government, and FAERS is the total source of our funds, and then you can see where our uses of these funds are. And that is for the regional transit system. When I was talking about 30% for fares, that was with Metro Transit. And when you dilute it all, then it drops a bit. But you can see what the uses are for that as well. Metro Transit, on page 49, as I mentioned, is the workhorse. 93% of the region is provided service through Metro Transit. It has over 800 buses, 27 rail cars, 113 routes, and 2,500 employees. And with that, Madam Chair, perhaps I'll stand for questions.
Okay, questions. Representative Housen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I should probably remember this history as well as you, but and Representative Lanchesky is just leaving, and she would probably know. when the legislature determined that only Hennepin County was going to pay for the stadium, why did we still retain the name Minnesota Ballpark Authority and have it under Met Council? Why wouldn't that have just become a Hennepin County entity?
Mr. Bell.
What would be the argument for even having that under the Metropolitan Council umbrella?
Mr. Bell.
Madam Chair, Representative Houseman, the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission.
The Minnesota Ballpark Authority was the one I was. The last one on.
For the Twins? It's not a part of Met Council.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Bell, go ahead. Answer the question.
It's not a part of Met Council.
Okay. Oh, okay. Representative Hammond.
Well, I saw structure of metropolitan government, and so I mistook that.
Madam Chair?
Okay, Ms. Lefevre.
And we don't want it to be a part of
Ms. Lefevre. Madam Chair and Representative Hammond, I think that includes all of the commissions and councils, not just those that are under the Met Council, but the separate ones like the Mosquito Control Commission and the Minnesota Ballpark Authority would be a separate one, too.
And then,
Representative
Madam Chair, is there a discussion of when on the issue of transit, when that seven county metro area becomes an outdated and unfair definition for transit?
Mr. Bell.
Madam Chair, Representative Houseman, one of the candidly frustrations for one of the questions I get most often is, why is the Met Council limited just to the seven counties? And I have stated repeatedly that we have no interest or intent of growing beyond the seven county area. I think that there's many issues and concerns and problems that would result from that. Having said that, I think there's broad agreement that this is an artificial boundary and that the fact of the matter is the metropolitan area is seen by residents in this state as being larger than the seven counties. Largely, I would argue that that is a political decision that the legislature would have to grapple with and goes far beyond anything that I would venture into in making a recommendation.
Further questions by any other member? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chairman Bell, you referenced the increase in ridership on the transit system. Can you tell us here on the committee what the ridership was right before the last, I'm talking about the whole system, what was the ridership on the transit system before the strike, and what is the entire total of ridership today? Total then, total today.
Mr. Bell.
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, I think I'm going to defer to Brian Lamb, who is the manager, Arlene McCarthy, to answer that. It's a very specific question.
please come to the table and state your name for the record?
When I came to the council, the ridership was at about under 70 million, right? Mm-hmm. It was at about 69 million, and as I mentioned, we're at 74. Where was that before the strike? I don't have that on the tip of my tongue. Mm-hmm. Where was after?
Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Brian Lamb. I'm the general manager for Metro Transit. We do not have that number at hand, but we certainly can provide that to the committee and to you, Representative Olson, as soon as I get back to the office.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just looking at your tiers discussion, one little piece of it that kind of phase to me is that has there any discussion as far as light rail in the direction of north and downtown Minneapolis?
Mr. Bell.
Madam Chair, Representative Dominguez, there has been no direct discussion about light rail going to the north, really to the northwest. Of course, we have the North Star coming in, which will, the heavy rail line. I have heard some rumors about some interest in Botno Boulevard, that line perhaps. Commissioner Olpat has mentioned, at least in the press, that there has been some interest in that being a rail line. But no one has approached me about that. There has been no really official discussion about that at all, is I think the only fair answer.
Further questions? All right. With that, thank you, Mr. Bell. I look forward to you coming before this committee in the future.
Good. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Members, before you leave, the one thing that I neglected to do was introduce the staff. And given the fact that they are new and they will be a great resource for you, I just wanted to make sure we did that before you left. So why don't you start, Peter?
My name is Peter Strohmeyer, and I'll be the committee administrator for the committee. And anything you need, just let me know.
Okay.
My name is Erin Hubert, and I'm the committee legislative assistant, and I'm here to assist you in any way you need.
My name is Mark Nicely. I'm with Republican Research.
Is there any other staff in the room that I should introduce? I do have also an intern in the room. If you wanted to stand up and introduce yourself as well. All right. Kate Weeks, are you here? Go ahead. Okay. Anyone else? The Pages. You want to introduce yourself? Okay. Okay. Now, the pages are currently temporary, and they will be assigned. We will have a page assigned after. But thank you, members. Again, I will do my best to get you out of here on time. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.